Good morning. The first case we have today is United States v. Barty. Are counsel ready? Okay, we'll hear first from the appellant.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, good morning. May it please the court, I'm Major Benjamin Robles, and I represent the appellant, Lance Corporal Manuel Barty, United States Marine Corps. Chief Judge Erdman, with the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
For over 50 years, this court has prohibited the use of rank to exclude consideration.
Could you speak up a little, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. For over 50 years, this court has prohibited the use of rank to exclude consideration of eligible service members for court-martial panels. Yet Lance Corporal Barty faced a court-martial panel that was stacked with senior officers and senior enlisted. And before the military judge could even rule on Lance Corporal Barty's challenge of the panel, the trial counsel told the judge why, regardless of how he would rule, they would end up with the same panel in this case. The trial counsel predicted that the convening authority would recite the magic words, that he knew he could choose anyone, and this was still the panel that he wanted. The CA proved the trial counsel correct later that afternoon when he reconfirmed the same panel members using the trial counsel's words under circumstances that belie the sincerity of his application of the Article 25 criteria.
How do we know that? That belie the sincerity. Is there anything of record that shows what went on in the convening authority's mind?
Judge Stuckey, we don't have a smoking gun in this case, but we do have quite a bit of gun smoke. And we can infer quite a bit from the circumstances of this case. And I do intend to get to that in the main portion of my argument.
Okay, well, let me ask you something straight up. Even if this is error, where's the prejudice? Because the defense counsel made this mysterious allusion to other factors entering into the ultimate decision to go judge alone. Now, if the defense counsel had made the proper incantation, you might have had error and you might have had prejudicial error. But we've got this something floating out there that the defense counsel can't discuss because he's bound by attorney-client privilege, which, he says to the military judge, is another motivator toward going judge alone. If that's the case, and there's nothing on the record that indicates the judge was biased or prejudiced in any way, then how is your accused prejudiced?
Judge Stuckey, the fundamental prejudice here is that Lance Corporal Barty has a right to a members panel, which he initially selected, and was forced to abandon that right, that selection of that right, because of the improperly selected panel.
And well, because of the improper selection and something else, which we don't know, but there's something out there because defense counsel said so.
Yes, Your Honor. However, this court has repeatedly held that abandonment of the right doesn't waive the initial selection, and going judge alone doesn't cure any defect. Having a good judge preside over the remainder of the trial isn't actually a fix to the problem that he was deprived of his right to a panel.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, but we can't tell that he didn't deprive himself of a panel by saying he's going judge alone and that there was other reasons that he didn't explain. I think that was Judge Stuckey's point.
Judge Ryan, it's true that the trial defense counsel said that there was another reason or other reasons that informed this decision. The first reason...
The military judge wasn't going to accept his request to go judge alone, right? I mean, he made clear that he wasn't going to accept the request if it was because of the panel.
That's correct, Judge Ryan. He said if it was only because of the panel. And so... Once the judge said that he wouldn't grant the request if it was only because of the improperly selected panel, the trial defense counsel said, in addition to that, we have other reasons that are privileged and aren't necessarily even separate from that from the panel issue. For example,
he didn't say that.
Your Honor, no. He said that he had other reasons and never said that the primary reason wasn't the initial reason that they gave, which was the improperly selected panel.
But where does that leave Barty if the military If he makes a request to be tried by judge alone because he thinks that the panel is tainted in its selection process, and the judge says, well, I'm not going to give you that if that's your reason. I mean, isn't that what the judge is saying there? I'm not going to grant that because you think that the panel is tainted. So where does that leave the process at that point?
Chief Judge Urban, clearly the judge was mistaken in that because we have precedents from this court that establish that an appellant can, an accused can change his plea or, his forum selection based on the improper selection. And so when the judge tried to force him to do that, that was just really a nullity. That's a legal error. And it shouldn't be held against Lance Corporal Barti.
Are you saying that the military judge is required to allow an accused to go judge alone? Because I don't think that's the law.
No, Your Honor, but his framing of the problem, he's saying that he wouldn't because of this issue wasn't legally correct. It's permissible for him to change his forum selection based on this problem. So the judge saying that he wouldn't do that based on what he said was precedent was a misunderstanding of the law.
So what should the military judge have done?
The military judge should have enforced Article 25 properly, Your Honor.
But in terms of, I understand that part of it, but what should a military judge do when an accused says, no, I've got this secret reason I'm not going to disclose to you why I've decided to change form? What is a military judge to do then to tee this up for appellate review?
Judge Olson, the military judge could have just granted the request. He could have denied the request. Either way, there would have been material for this court to review. I don't think that this really changed anything. It does change the prejudice analysis by making it easier, but I'll get to that later. I think the military judge's role in this was really just a bump in the road and doesn't affect the ultimate outcome here. So to get into the waiver issue just a little bit more, there are at least four cases that this court has recognized that changing your forum selection due to an improper selection of a panel, whether it's just the enlisted members or the full panel, that changing the selection doesn't waive the issue. And here, as mentioned, Lance Corporal Barti never backed off of his main reason for wanting to go judge alone. In fact, all he said, his trial defense counsel said, was that there were other reasons, other implying that this other one persists, the main one, the initial one, persists. And so it shouldn't be held as a withdrawal of his objection in any way. And in light of this court's long recognition of the right to change forum in these circumstances, it should not be construed as waiver.
Well, counsel, I just want to make something clear. I'm not saying it's waived. I'm saying, where's the prejudice? I'm assuming it's not waived, but I'm saying, under these facts, where's the prejudice? That's what I'm asking you.
And Judge Stuckey, the prejudice is that Lance Corporal Barti was forced to abandon his right.
Yeah,
to...
no, I understand your answer. I just wanted to make that clear.
Oh, understood. So another question in this case is whether the convening authorities purported curing of the initial problem, the initial adverse ruling, was sufficient. And it was not, and there are several reasons why. First of all, there's a good case law that shows why the actions of the CA in this case do not cure the initial problem with the panel. There are also reasons to think that the whole charade of reselecting, reconfirming the panel was disingenuous. And third, the CA didn't even properly apply the criteria when he purported to. So to take the case law first, United States versus Hilo and Green, they both have convening authorities who purport to apply Article 25 criteria, and in both cases, this court held that their apparently good faith application of Article 25 was insufficient to cure the taint of an improper selection of the panel. So in Hilo, the issue was with a tainted pool that was tainted because a subordinate had improperly selected members whom he believed were more severe and would support good order and discipline type mentality in courts martial. The CA didn't know that had happened, and this went through three different levels of scrutiny before it finally got to the CA's desk to make his final selection. And even though he applied and said, this is the panel that I want, these are the most qualified under Article 25, this court held that didn't cure the taint. So just application of Article 25 doesn't fix anything.
So where's the taint here? Isn't this a much more benign situation?
Judge Olson, it is not quite the smoking gun that we have in Hilo, but there is nonetheless a taint of improper selection by using rank, which has been for over 50 years held to be improper.
Aren't we placing a convening authority in the real world in an untenable position? We've got Article 25 that says, convening authority, you have to choose the best qualified. Not well qualified, not qualified, but best qualified. Then you've got these qualifications that absolutely steer towards more senior people, except for judicial temperament. With judicial temperament, that's something that it would seem that a convening authority would have to base on personal interaction with a person. In 06, there's going to more naturally know senior NCOs and senior officers than junior officers and junior NCOs. So we're saying through Article 25, convening authority, you have to do all these things. But then when a very senior panel gets selected, we turn around and say, wait a minute, you should not have done it this way. What's a convening authority to do?
Judge Olson, the military has developed a pretty robust system using members' questionnaires for convening authorities to be able to assess more individuals than he personally might know. And I think.
But is that mandated under Article 25? I recognize that that's a typical process. But where can you point to the fact that that's required under Article 25 or even this court's case law?
It's certainly not required, Your Honor. However, it does mitigate the problem of this being an untenable position. I don't think it is untenable because there's a good workaround to ensure that the convening authority can fully consider the broad category of eligible personnel.
Okay, you're saying how you think it ought to be done, but I'm asking where is it compelled that it must be done that way?
I think this goes to what you said earlier, Judge Olson, about all the factors tending toward more senior panel. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Well, how so? If you're talking about age, education, training, experience, length of service, why don't all of those, it's kind of like a target-rich environment for a convening authority to look at the senior NCOs and the senior officers to comply with those requirements to get the best qualified members on the panel?
Judge Olson, take, for example, age. In a case of a he said, she said sexual assault allegation, why is it that someone who's 50 years old and hasn't been dating for, say, 30 years, is, by virtue of their age, better qualified to judge the perhaps mistaken beliefs, reasonably mistaken beliefs, of a 21-year-old who's engaged in active dating? I don't think the age.
So, wait a minute. You want a convening authority to, in each case, look and say, I'm going to select panel members based on their ability to relate to the underlying offense? When we then have exactly what we don't want, where you would have a panel member who says, I'm really hardcore when it comes to sexual assault, and the convening authority says, okay, you seem to have particular interest in that area, we're going to put you on the panel. Isn't that a slippery slope?
No, Your Honor. I think to say that age would play out differently in different cases isn't to say that someone who's a volunteer who has particular interests should therefore be also considered in some way. Article 25 criteria are what they are, and I'm certainly not arguing to expand those criteria. My point is simply that the criteria themselves don't necessarily lend themselves to senior officers. Certainly in some cases they could, and on balance, time and service might. However, chief warrant officers will often have more rank, more time in service than even a colonel. And so it's not necessarily true that having a panel of 04s to 06s is necessary, even under your understanding of the general tendency of Article 25 criteria to lead to a more senior panel. So going back to the to Hilo, Hilo had a case where the CA didn't know about the underlying taint. In Green, the Bedrock case from, I believe, 1970, Green, the CA knew about the taint. The CA knew that he was confronted with a tainted panel and nonetheless decided that this was the best panel, that the most qualified panel, and reimposed that panel. And again, that case was flipped. Turning to the reasons to think this is disingenuous. First, this was part of an SOP. This command, the committee authority in conjunction with this SJA and the trial counsel, had an SOP for systematically imposing senior panels. The trial counsel said to the judge prior to even ruling on the motion, and we'll just note for whatever it's worth that in prior situations where this came up, we ended up with the exact same panel that was originally selected after going through reconfirming. And then he apparently is quoting what the CA will say, yes, I understand, I can pick whoever I want to. This is still a panel that I want to go forward with. Now, he used the term prior situations. This is something they do repeatedly, so much so that he's comfortable telling the judge why his ruling won't matter. Secondly, the court recessed at 2:31 in the afternoon, and that afternoon the CA signed a pre-drafted memo, which lo and behold included the trial counsel's exact language that he proffered to the court. Third, in his memo, the CA said that he had an 8,700-person roster, but no questionnaires, and so he had no basis to compare potential members. So assuming normal business hours, that's 1.2 names per second, if you consider them. But in reality, the CG decided to reconfirm the same panel before any consideration of other eligible members. And we know that because the SJA testified that he had drafted the CG's memo indicating why he chose the panel after meeting with the CG earlier that morning around 10:30, as soon as he heard that the judge might sustain the defense challenge. This is several hours before the judge even ruled. So this hint that he might have considered these 8,700 people is belied by the fact that he made his decision before he ever got a chance to even look at the roster that the SJA provided him. And the CG didn't even accurately represent his role in the prior panel selection. He said in his memo that, like other selections in this case, he had applied the Article 25 criteria, even though he wasn't the one who initially selected this panel.
Wasn't he the one that replaced two members from the original panel? So, I mean, it's not really the inaccurate statement that you make it out to be.
He did say the selections in this case, Your Honor, and therefore he's talking about more than one prior selection, and that's factually incorrect. Oh, I suppose, yes, Your Honor. If he's talking about the one replacement of two members as two separate selections, then I take your point. But with all these other circumstances that undermine the face value of the CA's claim to be applying Article 25. And I'm sorry, Chief Judge, I see I'm out of time.
Okay, you'll have time on rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Major Corey Carvin, along with Colonel Valerie Danilek, on behalf of the United States. This Court should affirm the findings and sentence here for two reasons. The convening authority properly selected the members utilizing the Article 25 criteria, and even if there was an exclusion of members based upon rank, appellant was not materially prejudiced. Addressing the second principle that this Court laid out in Dowdy, the burden is on the appellant to show that there was a systematic exclusion of members based upon rank. Now, it's a de novo review. However, this Court has stated that the military judge's findings of fact are reviewed under the clearly erroneous standard.
Counsel, when we've said that our concern is about an unresolved appearance. Appearance to whom? The public? This court? To whom?
It would suggest in Kirkland that the suggestion there is to the public itself, an appearance of a fair panel.
I won't belabor the point, but based on all the points that the major just made, in terms of trial counsel getting up there and saying, hey, Your Honor, you can seek to have this changed. You've identified the fact there's a problem here, but the convening authority is going to tell you, military judge, go pound sand. You just wait and see. And in fact, the convening authority, it could be interpreted as the convening authority saying, go pound sand. If the public is watching this, why isn't the public saying, this isn't right. This isn't fair.
Well, for three reasons, Your Honor. First, you need to look at the context of when the trial counsel actually made that statement. The military judge, without receiving any type of affidavit or statement by the original convening authority, made a determination that there was a systematic exclusion based upon rank. Now, that's because the government did not offer any type of evidence as to what the convening authority had initially done, whether he had followed through with Article 25 criteria or not. After there was a systematic exclusion, it is speculative on the part of appellant to state that that's what the TC was referring to. It's just a speculative a position to state that the trial counsel was merely stating that, well, the convening authority had followed the Article 25 criteria initially, and so there's no reason when I take this back to him, he's not just going to state, okay, yes, I've already looked at this, or I'm looking at this, and I'm going to follow the Article 25 criteria. These members meet those Article 25 criteria because I know them personally. I know that they actually do meet that, and therefore, this is the panel that I want.
What happens if you get a convening authority in that position, lengthy period of time, convenes lots of courts martial, and each one, it's all 06s and E8s or E9s. Court martial after court martial after court martial. And whenever a military judge says, wait a minute, the convening authority simply says, I've complied with my Article 25 responsibilities. Is there any way where an accused could get past that?
Yes, Your Honor, that would have to be, since the burden is on the appellant to show a systematic exclusion, that systematic aspect of it, the appellant can bring that to the attention of the military judge through
so
evidence.
So how is this case considerably different from that?
Well, Your Honor, we don't have
what this convening authority had done.
We don't have that evidence before the members, before the military judge at the time. There's nothing in the record to contradict what the convening authority stated in his affidavit. That he did know these members personally and he selected them based upon the Article 25 criteria.
So to go back to the analogy the major made, do we have to have a smoking gun or is there a lot of smoke sufficient?
No, Your Honor, there's appellant's entire argument is premised on the idea that the convening authority is lying in the record in his affidavit where he states that he selected these members personally because he knew them and they met the Article 25 criteria. There's just nothing to support that contradiction. It's an uncontroverted fact, and in fact the military judge made a finding of fact stating that the convening authority had the intent and made that determination based upon Article 25 criteria. And that finding of fact is not clearly erroneous, and this court should adopt that finding.
Well, there's supposedly 8,000 people in this command. How many do you think the convening authority knows personal, close and up front, to the point he's going to trust them on a panel? Not very many. So are you going to get a situation in this command where the practical effect is that the convening authority's pals are recycled through panel after panel after panel, or what?
If that was the case, Your Honor, again, the burden's on the appellant to be able to bring that to the attention of the military judge and provide some evidence of that.
Well, it seems like the appellant did. Not that they were recycled, but this panel was certainly recycled.
Recycled, meaning the convening authority selected them.
Said, okay, here's the panel. Judge says, no. Convening authority says, you know, here's the panel. Now shut up, Judge. Isn't that the situation?
No, Your Honor, I would disagree with the characterization of the convening authority doing that to the military judge, simply because the convening authority stated in his affidavit that he had access to the command roster. The military judge initially did not know that the convening authority even considered all 8,000 members of the MLG.
Well, I'm not saying he has to consider all 8,000.
But
to consider a bigger vendor than, you know, 5 or 8 people.
Correct, Your Honor. However, this is very similar to United States v. Ward, where the subordinate commanders, or so the nomination process was problematic. However, the selection process, when the commander, the commuting authority actually went to select the members, had access to the entire roster and chose those members. Now, in United States v. Ward, he chose the same members that were nominated. However, he followed the Article 25 criteria, and he stated that in a post-trial affidavit. Here, similarly, we have an affidavit by the convening authority stating that he had the command roster. He knew and was advised that he could select any of the 8,000 members of his command in the MLG. And he chose these members because he knew that they met the Article 25 criteria. If there was systematic exclusion, we would need more evidence from the appellant suggest that they're always...
They may have met the Article 25 criteria, but there's this notion snaking through here of he knew of, and therefore he knew they met the Article 25 criteria.
Correct, Your Honor, and that would mostly accelerate his selection process
quite a bit.
Correct, Your Honor.
Isn't there a little bit of a fiction here in terms of acting as if the convening authority is sitting on Mount Olympus and deciding this unilaterally? Didn't the SJA have a significant role in this whole process?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. However, the SJA does have the ability to provide guidance to the SJA and even to compile a list, and that comes from Downing as well as Dowdy.
And I'm not questioning that. My point is that the SJA, in doing so, didn't he improperly narrow the potential members on this panel by only looking at 04s and above, and I think it was E7s and but so then to say, well,
Your Honor, how,
the military judge had the 8,000 or whatever people before him, isn't the system cooked here?
No, Your Honor, because you need to look at the intent of what the SJA was attempting to do. Based upon Your Honor's statements to the appellant earlier, going through the Article 25 criteria, the SJA was attempting to get at those criteria quicker, more efficiently, by using this top-down approach. And we do have that in the record where the SJA states that he used this top-down approach, and he would have proceeded to more junior officers if he hadn't found the members that he needed to fill the panel. In the SJA's opinion, that got to those Article 25 criteria. There was no intent to exclude. There was no intent or anything but a benign reason for going after these particular senior members in order to get at the Article 25 criteria.
Counsel, obviously we know that he has the 8,000 name phone book in front of him. Is there any testimony or evidence anywhere that he looked through that list?
No, Your Honor, other than just the commuting authority stating that he had access to it and knew that he could choose anybody in the MLG, in that 8,000 list.
I mean, and this is a little bit of a supposition, but by not saying that he looked at it indicates that he didn't look at it, because if he had looked at it, if I were in his position, I would have said that.
Your Honor, I don't think that's a reasonable inference, but I don't think that's necessarily dispositive of this case. In United States v. Ward, the convening authority had access to the entire roster as well and never made mention in his affidavit that he looked at every single name. There's no requirement under Article 25 for him to look at every single name in his command. The requirement is that he looks at Article 25 criteria and tries to find those members to fill a panel.
And so here he looked at the pre-selected list by the SJA and no further.
He looked at the names on that, correct, Your Honor, names of that, as well as understanding that he could access the entire roster and choose any member that he wanted to.
And those names were taken from the questionnaires that were sent only to the individuals in the higher ranks.
Correct, Your Honor. However, as was pointed out, the previous commuting authority, in the previous selection, he had replaced a couple of those names. In this regard, when it came back to him, he simply provided an affidavit stating what his reasoning was and based upon his criteria in Article 25, and that's why he chose those members, in order to take back to the military judge and say, no, these were the members that I did it right the first time. Now I'm telling you, military judge, that I did it right. Here's my affidavit, and I met the Article 25 criteria.
And you don't think the process looks a little fishy to some member of the public who's watching it?
The nomination process may have been an improper nomination process or maybe not the best practice. I can understand why the SGA went after the senior and did that top-down approach. However, when you take a look at the selection process itself, which is where Kirkland's turned on the specific instruction itself, or excuse me, the selection itself. In Kirkland, Ward. Kirkland actually laid it out, the appearance of a fair panel. But in Ward, there was an exclusion, again, of in the nomination process, but not in the selection process. And that was sufficient for this court to state that there wasn't an appearance of an unfair panel. The appearance of a fair panel was there in Ward, and therefore there was no prejudice under the Kirkland prong.
What's your view on the prejudice? Let's say that we don't agree with you about the appearance. What's your view on prejudice?
Well, Your Honor, going back to Judge Stuckey's comments about the going military judge alone, one thing that's important here is that although the legitimacy of a foreign selection itself is reviewed de novo, that issue was waived. Appellant never brought it up at the lower court that there was this forced or involuntary election of military judge. And because he elected to go military judge alone for other reasons besides just the selection process, that should come into play, and that there's no prejudice here as to the selection process.
So you're arguing waiver, essentially?
No, Your Honor, that they would go into prejudice. He elected to go military judge alone and received a fair hearing from the military judge alone. There's nothing in the record to suggest that the military judge alone was biased against him, that the military judge wasn't elected properly or selected properly, and therefore that there's really no prejudice in the selection process.
If the panel was improperly selected, and then there's this mysterious thing out here that's covered by attorney-client privilege, but what we've been arguing about isn't this mysterious thing. We've been arguing about picking the panel. And so now we've got mixed motives. Where's that leave us? How are we supposed to exercise meaningful appellate review over this?
Well, Your Honor, by understanding that this court can presume that he elected to go military judge alone voluntarily, because that issue wasn't raised here, as well as there's no issue before this court as to
waiver again.
Waiver of forum selection, yes, Your Honor. That was mostly in the reply brief of appellant, and appellant made that argument before this court that he was coerced or he was forced into it, and that's a direct response to that. He elected voluntarily to go military judge alone for other reasons. That plays into the prejudice under the selection process. However, it's not a separate issue as to forum selection, whether that was voluntary or not. Nor did appellant raise an IAC claim. We can take trial defense counsel's claim when it's uncontroverted in the record and there's nothing that seems to suggest that trial defense counsel was lying when he got up there and he stated that he misspoke earlier regarding going military judge alone based upon the selection process, or when he gets up there and states that there's other reasons, plural, outside of the selection process to go military judge alone. He's attempting to have his cake and eat it too here by going military judge alone, avoiding some of the issues that really go into the Bartlett factors, whether we have evidence on the record under the Bartlett factors, whether it was prejudice, and then on the back end stating that the selection process was improper and stating that he involuntarily went military judge alone when there's nothing in the record and that issue isn't before this court. As to the other prejudice analysis under Bartlett, even though that's not the appearance under Bartlett, the factors do weigh in favor of the United States, that there is no prejudice here. When you look at the first factor of Bartlett, it talks about whether the convening authority selected the members with a proper motive. The military judge specifically made a finding of fact about that. He stated that the convening authority did not have an improper motive, that the motive was to get to those Article 25 criteria irrespective of rank, group, or class, and that's in Joint Appendix 28. And that's not clearly erroneous, and that should be adopted by this court. As to the second factor, under Bartlett, the convening authority's motivation was benign. There's no evidence of UCI here. The cases cited by appellant, Green as well as Hillo, they all had UCI mixed in with an improper selection process. There's no evidence of UCI here other than the speculative assertions by appellant. In his affidavit, again, the convening authority stated that he believed all the members met the Article 25 criteria. And like Ward, this shows an honest, even if erroneous, we're assuming that there was an erroneous nomination process in the first place, it's an honest belief that he was meeting the requirements of Article 25. Appellant concedes Factor 3 of Bartlett. And then if you look at 4, 5, and 6, again, we don't have a lot of evidence of the 4, 5, 6 factors of Bartlett because, again, appellant elected to go military judge alone. However, if you do look at Factor 5, in Ward, this court emphasized the fact that there had been no allegation that the panel members ultimately selected did not qualify under Article 25. So even though we don't have evidence as to whether they met 25 other than the convening authority's assertions, we don't have evidence to suggest that they did not meet Article 25. And in United States v. Ward, this court did emphasize that point, and that should weigh in favor of the United States as well. And therefore, there's no prejudice here. Again, taken as a whole in the context of this trial, the legality, fairness, and impartiality were not put into doubt here. There was no appearance of an unfair panel. And without further questions, that concludes the United States argument.
Thank you, counsel. Now I hear rebuttal from the appellant.
In Hilo, the dissent in that case, Judge Cox, said that the turning away from an initial selection of a members panel, enlisted members, because of the taint, was structural error unless the taint was removed. And he was dissenting because he thought that the reason the appellant in that case went to a judge alone trial for the findings phase was because of a pretrial agreement. And so he thought it was a completely independent reason. So when even the dissent says that just the remaining taint, the fact that there is still this factor in play that's affecting the decision of the appellant to change his initial forum selection to judge alone, even then the dissent in that case said that that was still a taint that met structural error analysis. Now, I'm not arguing right now for structural error, but just to point out that having other factors doesn't change anything. Other factors, in addition to the main factor, doesn't remove the taint. To address the issue of the improper application of Article 25 criteria, even if we take the CA at his word that he properly applied Article 25 criteria, he did so incorrectly. Because when he said that he knew these people personally and that's why he chose them, he used something that's permissible, knowing people, in an impermissible way. He used it to systematically exclude 8,700 people from consideration. He did that before the judge even came up with his final ruling, as mentioned earlier.
But there has to be not just an exclusion, there has to be an improper exclusion. So
yes,
where's
Your Honor.
The improper part, particularly considering that on JA 37, trial defense counsel said, we have a very senior panel on its face, there's nothing wrong with that.
I don't think that comment changes the fact, Judge Olson, that the way that the CA used his personal knowledge of these individuals was to exclude everyone else systematically. That's the improper part of it. You can use other factors.
But how do we get there when, in any case like this, a convening authority says, I had the ability to choose amongst all these people. I recognize that fact, but I chose not to do so. How do we pierce that assertion?
Judge Olson, if the selection process is clear, for example, questionnaires are provided to the CA and he pulls from a pool rather than just rubber stamping a list that's already made up, then we have a much better sense of that. And Chief Judge Urban, I see that I'm out of time. May I continue?
You can conclude.
And so those, so with other circumstances, we could be sure that the process was not tainted by this improper criteria of knowing in a systematic way. So in this case, the convening authority twice deprived Lance Corporal Barty of a properly selected panel and violated his right to the same. And therefore, this court should set aside his conviction and sentence. Thank you.
Thank you. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10:25.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 10:25.